what we studied last, and it's been a week since we last studied this topic with the gospel meeting last week. You know, this book is really practical in terms of, I'm getting a signal that something's not right. Alright, just tell me, just yell out what's wrong. Better? Does it look ridiculous? Okay. Can you hear me okay? Can you hear me now? That's the popular thing, right? Alright, how about now? I'm still getting funny looks, but anyway, I guess I'll just look this way. Hopefully you can hear me. Anyway. Where was I? This is a very practical book. I mean, it expresses a lot of things that we need to be thinking about in our daily lives. Just in the very beginning, prayer be made for all people, especially those who are in authority. I got to thinking about that a little bit. I know, I really appreciated the things that Justin pointed out last week. I think he hit the nail on the head in all of this. Just the absolute depravity and the ruthlessness of the leaders who were leading at the time of the Roman Empire, Nero. Nero had his own mother executed. And we sometimes get concerned about our leaders, and we rightfully should be concerned about our leaders. And it doesn't mean we have to go along with what they do, or I don't think we're prohibited from speaking out against the things that they do that are wrong, but we still have to respect them and pray for them. And I think we have to be careful in how we do it. I see some social media particularly are just as very rude and very ugly in the way that they express their displeasure. And I think there's a right way and a wrong way to do it. I don't think sometimes we realize how good we have it. I thought about that. I think it was Brent Ciotta's prayer the other morning that made me think about that. We really do have it well compared to people in a lot of other countries with respect to the freedoms that we have and the ability to worship. I mean, some countries don't have anything close to this kind of freedom to exercise their religion. So we need to be thankful for that. Basically, he's telling us to do that so that we can live a quiet and peaceful life, a godly and dignified life. If we look, he in verse 8, he talks about men in every place should pray, lifting up holy hands without anger. Then he addresses women, several aspects there. The attire, the appearance of a woman, particularly as is addressed here, should be one who professes godliness. When someone looks at you, ladies, and I think that the principle still is the principle still applies to men in many ways, or in all ways. It just says, in fact, it says likewise in verse 9. So that's saying, it's kind of the same theme here. When someone looks at you, they should think of godliness. I'll give you examples of something that's happened to me recently. I had an occasion in the last 6 months to see people that I thought were people that I knew, all ladies in this case. And when I looked at them, I thought, that's so-and-so. But I immediately did a double take because what they had on did not fit the people that I knew. And it wasn't something that was just overtly immodest. It was kind of living on the edge, kind of getting as close as they could get, would be the way I would put it. In one case, couple of cases were worse than the others. But when I saw them later on and realized that's not who I thought it was, because the women that I knew profess godliness in how they dress. I thought that was something that was worth sharing here. But we see that the woman is to live a quiet and submissive life, not to exercise authority over the man. And he goes back to the very beginning of time, what happened in the Garden of Eden with respect to the sin, because of course Adam being formed first, then Eve. And Adam not being deceived initially, but the woman was deceived. Of course, Adam participated in that sin and bore the consequences of it as well. And yet, he goes back to that for his argument. And a lot of people in the world today want to say, well, that was cultural for Paul's time because that's the way culture dictated it. And in reality, his arguments are going back to the very beginning. He is not utilizing culture as his means for issuing this instruction. Anyway, just a quick summary. I thought Justin did a really good job of that. In fact, when he emphasized the part about the heart, our heart is what we have to be emphasizing on, what the thing we have to be looking toward, the thing that we need to be working on, is what I'm trying to say. Let's go over to Timothy, the third chapter. Now we're going to get into this qualifications for elders and deacons. Now, 1 Timothy is not the only place that we see qualifications for elders, right? We also see that where else? Titus, of course, Titus. And what we'll try to do here in a few minutes is try to blend both of those in. This is not going to be an exhaustive or detailed study, but it will be one, hopefully, that will kind of reemphasize hopefully what we already know with respect to these offices. I do want to show you something that I think is worth showing here. When it comes to the office of an elder, there are different terms. Now, in our day and language, we usually utilize the term elder. And that term is used in the Bible. And we'll have some verses here that will show that here in just a minute on this next chart. But there are four different terms that we see sometimes used in the Bible. And it depends on the translation that you use. The Greek term presbyteros is usually translated elder. It is used in a plural term, presbytery or presbyteron. Sometimes it's called eldership. But that emphasizes the experience, the spiritual maturity of a person, of a man who serves in that role. Episkopos, you can almost see the word episcopal in that, right? The modern day term that we have. That would be used in terms of an overseer or a bishop. There would be nothing wrong with us calling our elders bishops. In fact, I've heard a man in prayer one time do that at another place, and I thought that was certainly appropriate. This emphasizes his oversight as a guardian or a superintendent, someone who's in charge of something. Hoiman, and I may be mispronouncing the Greek term, is used for shepherd or pastor. I believe in most English Bibles, the word pastor only occurs one time. And that's in a list, and I think it's 1 Timothy. Well, I'm not going to say I'm wrong. I may be wrong. But it's used, I may have it on my next chart anyway. It is used to describe one, it's metaphoric in its usage. It's a metaphor for one who is shepherding a flock. When you think of a shepherd, what does a shepherd do? Well, he guides that flock. And what it's doing, it's relating a local congregation to a flock of sheep. And a shepherd is guiding that flock. So that's emphasizing that role. And of course, a shepherd is one who protects the sheep, protects that flock as it's grazing and as it's moving to wherever it is it's going. And of course, the term presbyteron or sometimes presbytery is a group of men serving in that role. It might even be used as a group of older men. But again, that's emphasizing the age and experience of people who serve in that role. And we'll see some things about that in terms of the qualifications that will kind of help us understand that. Now let's look at some passages here that use that. And this is, I don't believe, an exhaustive list. I got most of them. I had a chart that I found from an article that I had. It only listed a few of these, and I added a couple myself. Probably the best place to go to show the interchangeability of this office is to go to Acts, the 20th chapter. And I'd like for you to turn over there in just a minute. We'll notice that. But you can be turning over there. You can see different terms are used in different places. And really it just emphasizes the different roles that that men who serve in that capacity provide. Think of it this way. A person in a job might be a supervisor. And he might be called that. He might be a leader. He might be a manager. But the same person serves that role. Well, that's in a similar way, the different terms to describe an elder, the office of an elder, or bishop, or shepherd, or pastor, is used very similarly. Again, each one is emphasizing a different aspect of the role they provide. And even if you, in the religious world in general, uses the term pastor, for one who is the preacher. But from what I see, I don't see many of them enforcing all of the qualifications that are listed here, the ones that we'll notice here in a few minutes, for pastor. Hope I'm making sense there. Turn over to Acts, the 20th chapter, or you've probably already done that. I think it's important to point this out. Mainly, I think most of us here understand this, but just because of the confusion in the religious world in general, because of this, Acts 20 and verse 17. Now from Miletus, he sent to Ephesus. This is Paul doing this. He called the elders of the church to come to him. And you see in verses 18, and he began speaking to them there. Look down to verse 28. Pay careful attention to yourselves and all the flock. And here's this metaphor of shepherd coming into play, in which the Holy Spirit has made you overseers. The term that's used there is this term, well, right up there, episkopos. All right? And the term, well, I believe shepherd is used there too in one version, to shepherd the flock or pay attention to it, to care for the church of God in which he obtained with his own blood. The idea here is he's using this as a shepherd, one who is guiding a flock of sheep, but he's relating that to this congregation, to that congregation of Ephesus, and that's the role that our elders are to play here. I'm not going to go over all those passages, but I'd like for you to, I think it's good to emphasize this because in general, there's a lot of confusion in the religious world about this subject. And even when I turned to, I believe it was Vine, and I remember his first, W.E. Vine or something like that, who was an authority on New Testament words. And he might not even agree with us on a lot of things religiously, but you could see he understood that. And he had an article or a paragraph under the term eldership, I believe it was, or under the term elder, that emphasized this very thing right here, of how the interchangeability of the terms applied to the same office. So again, I think it's good to point that out. Let's look at now go back over to 1 Timothy, the third chapter. Let's just read the passage. I think a lot of times we'd be well served just to read it and listen to it. And then we'll talk about the different qualifications. This saying is trustworthy. If anyone aspires to the office of an overseer, he desires a noble work or a noble task. Therefore, an overseer must be above reproach, the husband of one wife, sober-minded, self-controlled, respectable, hospitable, able to teach, not a drunkard, not violent but gentle, not quarrelsome, not a lover of money. He must manage his own household well, with all dignity, keeping his children submissive. For if someone does not know how to manage his own household, how will he care for God's church? He must not be a recent convert, or he may be puffed up with conceit and fall into the condemnation of the devil. Moreover, he must be well thought of by outsiders, so that he may not fall into disgrace, into a snare of the devil. Deacons likewise must be dignified, not double-tongued, not addicted to much wine, not greedy for dishonest gain. They must hold the mystery of the faith with a clear conscience. And let them also be tested first. Then let them serve as deacons if they prove themselves blameless. Their wives likewise must be dignified, not slanderers, but sober-minded, faithful in all things. Let deacons each be the husband of one wife, managing their children and their households well. For those who serve as deacons gain a good standing for themselves and also great confidence in the faith that is in Christ Jesus. That's verses 1 through 13, and that discusses those qualifications. We see other qualifications for the elder or the overseer over in Titus, the first chapter. So let's talk about these. It says if anyone aspires to it or desires the office to become an overseer, it's a noble task. It's a good task. Probably not going to be an easy task, but it's a noble task. And it says right off the beginning, a person who wants to be an overseer, who is an overseer, must be above reproach. The term is sometimes used blameless. There's nothing that you can blame this person with. There's nothing in his character or nothing that he's done that that you would say that would call into question. Doesn't mean that he's been perfect. No one has lived perfectly. I'm afraid I've seen in times in other places that some have almost put this office up to such a pedestal, I'm not sure any human could qualify. I knew a congregation one time that had not had elders for years, and they weren't going to get elders because of the way some were treating some of the qualifications to such an extent that I don't know if anybody could qualify. You know, and it was just sort of someone was just picking anything they could find in terms of the person to try to keep someone from being that into that role, I believe, was part of the problem. Husband of one wife, he must be married. He must be the husband of one wife. I'm not going to go into all the different aspects of what ifs in this class. I think it would be good to do that in some cases, but I don't think we have time to delve into these too deeply in terms of this study. But it's obvious that he must be married. And we may have questions about how many times he's been married scripturally and things like that. But a person who's never been married cannot serve in this role. This is probably the biggest thing we need to take away from this. Again, it goes back to what we were saying a few minutes ago. The religious world views this as qualifications for a pastor when they would not enforce that particular qualification. Does that make sense? They would not. They would think, well, this is a qualification for a pastor, one who preaches, and yet many of them would have pastors, the way they use it, as men who would never have been married. So, that is obvious in this passage. It must be the husband of one wife. The next term I have here is temperate. What do some of your other versions say? Temperate? Nobody different. One thing that I did when I was studying this, I actually made a little spreadsheet and I listed the qualifications according to the English Standard Version, and then I listed the qualifications according to the New King James, and then the New American Standard. I think I even threw the NIV in there and just looked at the differences. And what I saw was that there would be sometimes two terms used for one in some versions versus the other, but the idea was still the same. Person who is temperate, one who is sober-minded, self-controlled, one who is prudent, one who is of good behavior, one who is respectable. I don't think these are that hard, are they? I think sometimes we can make them hard if we're of such a mind to do it, but I don't think it's that hard to understand what the qualifications are. He's sort of building a list of characteristics of someone who is a very noble character. One who makes an effort to try to put God first in his life. One, and you can see it in all aspects of his life, the way he approaches life. And it's not someone who's just always looking for a joke about something. I don't see that kind of person. Not seeing this, not one who never laughs. I'm thinking of a man I worked with at one time. I don't know if I ever heard him not joke about something. And I'm not saying it was anything necessarily off color. It was just, his approach to life was just to make a joke about everything. You know, and he was a likable guy in a lot of ways. And he seemed to be kind of popular with people, but he was not serious-minded. I don't think about hardly anything. And the work that he's involved in can be very serious at times. So I'm not trying to just single him out or pick on this guy. I don't know anything about him other than outside of the little bit of work that I know about him, but he does not seem to be someone who was very sober-minded. Again, and that's not saying that someone who is just never, who walks around with a sour face all the time, that's not what it's saying. Respectable is the word I have next in the English Standard Version. What do you think about hospitable? What does that mean? I know every one of you here knows that answer. Does that involve anything to do with your home? All right. 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 If we're the kind of people who are never willing to have anyone into our home, if we're the kind of person that never wants to help anybody do anything, then we're probably not meeting this qualification.
Okay.
And we must be willing to open up our home. Sometimes it may even involve opening our home to strangers and people that need it. But it certainly involves being hospitable to someone, to help seeing to the needs of others as well. Able to teach. What are your thoughts on able to teach? All right, that would imply a level of knowledge, wouldn't it? Yeah, it certainly would. And it kind of goes to another qualification we'll see here in just a minute about not being a novice. This would be a person who has some knowledge, but you know, you might, and that's definitely part of it, but you might be very knowledgeable, but does that necessarily mean you'd be a good teacher just because you have knowledge? I don't think so. I think this is a special ability, and I've heard people say, well, everybody should be able to teach. Well, that's true, but I don't think that's what this is saying here. This is the idea of someone who has demonstrated some capability in teaching. And it could be privately and publicly. I believe it's Titus. Let's go over to Titus for a second. I believe it elaborates a little bit about that. If you look at verse 9, he must hold firm to the trustworthy word as taught, so that he may be able to give instruction in sound doctrine, and also to rebuke those who contradict it. For there are many who are insubordinate, empty talkers and deceivers, especially those of the circumcision party. They must be silenced, since they are upsetting whole families by teaching for shameful gain what they ought not teach. And he goes in and mentions some things about Cretans there, and some other things there with respect to false teachers. I think it's connected with the idea of being able to stand up against those who are teaching false doctrine. I think this involves some ability to publicly teach. And all of our elders here are very involved in teaching. We see them in the pulpit. We see them in classes. And I think all of our elders meet that qualification very well. I've been in places where, and this would be years ago when I was much younger, living in another state, as part of the congregation, I don't mean to be ugly, but I don't believe one of the men ever taught. And again, I'm not trying to make those people look bad or talk ugly about them or anything, or especially not talk bad about an elder, but that was the situation that was a problem there. And it turned into a bigger problem later on with that congregation. But he must be able to teach. He must be able to teach. Let's go back over to yes, sir. Well, Freddie mentions that he thinks that it does not necessarily imply public teaching. And I certainly respect what he says about that. I'm not going to contradict an elder. That's what I'm teaching about him. I've kind of viewed it to think that it implies that, but that's something I need to think about some more and study some more. So, it's a good comment. But Freddie thinks, feels like that maybe he can be even more effective privately in teaching. So maybe I need to think about it a little bit more with respect to my opinion on that subject. But I appreciate your pointing that out, Freddie. Rob? Right. I won't be able to repeat everything Rob said because I can't remember that well, but his point was, it implies a special ability to be able to deal with someone. I'm losing. I'm standing up here and I can't remember, Rob. It was a very good point. Hopefully you're able to hear it all. But I thought of the terms, what you're saying in Titus there. They're, what you say very closely parallels what Titus says. There may be times where you have to stand up and deal with things. It may not always be easy, but it implies an ability to interact, to teach, as well. I didn't do justice to your comment, and I'm sorry. Okay. I'm still in Titus. Back over to 1 Timothy. Not given or addicted to wine or not a drunkard. This is not someone who has a drinking problem. Right? And I looked at several different versions as to how each one, depicts that, and that's the way it was depicted with respect to the elder. Not violent. You ever known someone, if you cross them the wrong way, they're ready to fight? There are people like that in the world. A lot of people like that in the world. And if you cross them, they're ready to throw punches. Well, this is not what an elder should be. This is someone who's not violent, not pugnacious. Not greedy for money. Now, depends on which version you read. Some put one place and some put the put gentle ahead of lover of money. Some do it the other way. Not greedy for money. You ever know any people who are greedy for money? And any way they can get it, pretty much, no matter what method it is, if they have a way to make an extra dollar or get something out of someone, they're going to do it. Whether it be cheat on their taxes, or whether it be take advantage of things at work. I've known people like that. That's not to be what an elder is. I think we can know from other passages none of us should be that way, right? And a lot of these would really be, if we can go to other passages and see, that a lot of these are things that all Christians should embody, right? But this is a special list created just for this position. Special list just for this position. Gentle. In fact, my version actually balances not a drunkard, not violent, but gentle, not quarrelsome. This is someone, again, and it kind of goes back to what we said a minute ago at the bottom of the page. It actually follows this in the English Standard. It'll say not violent, but gentle, not quick-tempered. Somebody's going to fly off the handle. I know people like that. I think of people that I work with a lot, because that's people I see most often during the week. And I know some that are pretty quick-tempered. You go to them with something, and immediately they're going to fly off the handle. And again, that's not to be what an elder should be. Not a lover of money or sordid gain, or not covetous. Again, you see different versions use different ways of expressing the same idea. This is someone, again, when you think of them, you're not thinking of someone who loves money and just tries to accumulate as much as they can. This is someone who doesn't care about those kind of things. It doesn't mean he's not industrious. It doesn't mean he doesn't save and try to take care of and provide for the future. It doesn't say that at all. The book of Proverbs emphasizes industriousness. Industriousness. So to be one who is prudent with their money and doesn't waste it is something that's a good thing. But we don't want to go too far with that to where the point to money becomes what rules us. People shouldn't think of us as someone who's just consumed with making as much as they can. You know, I'm glad to know I don't know a lot of Christians that way. I was trying to think in my mind, not that I would mention it here. I don't know a lot of Christians that I know. Maybe I don't know everything about them, but I don't think of that many Christians that I know who are just worried about money and want to accumulate as much as they can. And I'm glad to
be able to say that. Maybe I'm not running in the right circles, but hopefully it's just because not many do that. One who manages and rules his household well. Let's look at that one in particular. And what I have tried to do here, I have tried to blend Titus's qualifications in with 1 Timothy's. I know we're not probably not going to be able to study Titus in this quarter, but it is relevant because there are details given in Titus that are not necessarily in 1 Timothy that I think we need to think about. He manages and rules his household well. Just look at the different things here that are mentioned. And again, this is a blend between the two lists of qualifications. He has believing or faithful children. Okay? I believe that's in Titus. That's not necessarily in 1 Timothy. But we read that the elders, the children of the elder need to be Christians, is what this is implying. They need to be believing and faithful. He keeps his children in submission, under control. His children are not rebellious. Again, and there's some things here that Paul adds here. Look at verse 4. He must manage his own household well, with all dignity, keeping his children submissive. For if someone does not know how to manage his own household, how would he care for God's church? You see the point that he's making there? You know, he's got to have demonstrated at least, if he can't control his house, there's just no way he's going to be able to control or to manage the affairs of a congregation and deal with things that has to be dealt with there, is the point that he's making. I believe there's a little more made. I'm looking over to to Titus as well now, Titus 1. This is verse 6, second half of verse 6. And his children are believers and not open to the charge of debauchery or insubordination. Okay? So the idea here is this one whose children didn't have wild children who are out of control or doing whatever, and they're believing children. They're Christians. Again, that's a qualification. Man might be a great man and meet all the other qualifications, but if his children aren't faithful, he does not meet the qualifications of being an elder. I don't see anything in this that suggests that this is just one time for being put in office. I believe this is continuing on. I don't know how we could separate that qualification away from the others. Yeah. 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 For those of you who couldn't hear, and I'm sorry, Rob, I can remember his point for some reason. I don't know why. The story of Eli from the Old Testament is one that Eli was a good man in many ways and loved God and loved and was very spiritually minded, but his sons were not. And it had a stigma that seemed to follow Eli as well. And the Bible makes a point is that he did not restrain his sons. And one of the reasons that God punished Eli in the way that he did, along with his sons, is because he did not restrain them. Samuel's sons also, just a little later in that section of the Bible, Samuel was a good man, but his sons did not walk in his ways. His sons took bribes and were not of the same character as Samuel. So it's strange to think that people like Eli and Samuel might not have been qualified to be elders if they lived today and had children like they had then. It's something to think about. Not a recent convert or a novice. This is someone, again, it goes back to the idea of the term eldership. That doesn't mean has to be an extremely old man, but this is someone who is mature spiritually and someone who has some knowledge or has a good knowledge, not just some, a good knowledge of the truth and of the Bible and of God's plan. He has a good reputation among outsiders. Again, he might have a great reputation with respect to in the church, but if he's outside in the world and people see him totally differently, that's going to have an impact on a lot of different things, on his effectiveness as an elder,
And it may say something about whether or not he's really meeting the qualifications. People might know you. People that see you every day may know a lot more about you in terms of how you're living. These are additional ones that are in Titus, I believe, that are not necessarily in 1 Timothy. Not self-willed. This is not a person who has to get his own way every time. Loving what is good, sensible, just, devout, holding fast the faithful word. Again, there are different ways that you could make, some may not necessarily be a qualification like another one. Well, some might not view the way one is phrased as necessarily as a qualification, whereas another person might. But I think holding fast the faithful word would be one as well. Any question about any of these? I think these are just common sense. And we could go and look at all the different Greek words that are used. We just don't have time for that in our class. But I think you get a sense for what kind of person an elder is supposed to be. One who is sensible in the way they approach things. Well, that's definitely needed in terms of managing a church, a congregation, and leading a congregation. Being sensible about making plans and how to, even with respect to how we manage the affairs of the church with respect to the physical facilities. They have to be sensible in how they do things. You know, you... That's right. And if he points out that a lot of these are qualifications that we should all embody as Christians, and we can go to other places and see that. Let's talk about deacons. Now, the deacons have very similar qualifications. They're not necessarily as exhaustive of a list, and there are some that apply to the elder that do not apply to the deacon. But you see this being idea of being dignified. That is one that's applied to all of us in other passages. I thought about that passage one time. One who is dignified in how they act. They're not just out there trying to push the limits of everything and to be noticed. I've known some Christians like that in the past where they just kind of want to get in your face a little bit, kind of push your limits and push your buttons a little bit. And I'm thinking of one particular individual who's now unfaithful completely. He kind of wanted to push everybody's buttons a little bit, just kind of. Well, that was, I think, a lot of his purpose. And he's now unfaithful, but he was not very dignified in the way he acted. Reverent. What does it mean to be double-tongued? Yeah, might say something to one person and tell another person something different. Something different. Not addicted to much wine. Again, here's the idea. This cannot be someone who has a problem with drinking. Not greedy for dishonest gain. That was one that we saw in the other list, right, for elders. Blameless, same thing. Husband of one wife, same thing we see for elders. There is a slight difference here with respect to the qualification of the deacon with respect to his children and his household. What's that difference? We see what's similar, right? He manages children and their own households well, but what does it say with respect to the children about elders that it doesn't say about deacons? Yeah, it does not say anything about their being faithful or being believers. So there is a difference there. And we can see that with respect to even how we have elders and deacons here. Many would not have children old enough to be believers, as far as deacons. Now, some of you may wonder about this. I believe, and there's different ways to look at this, but there's a list. He sort of takes a side bar here, in a sense, and he mentions some things about their wives. I think, and I believe a lot of people who, if you read commentaries, a lot of them believe that this is referencing the elders and the deacons' wives. They are to be dignified. They're not to be slanderers. They're to be sober-minded and faithful in all things. Again, these are for the wives, and I believe it's for the elders and the deacons. I think he just sort of stops a moment and addresses wives for a second, and then he goes back to talking about deacons because he makes that distinction. And what I did, I actually went back and I incorporated the last few verses with respect to deacons in this list, and then we jump back and got the qualifications for the wives. I know these are things we're very familiar with, and we have taught a lot over the years, and that's a good thing. Is there any question or any comment anyone would like to make? I know our first bell rang. I was looking at these questions, and I didn't make an effort to fill those out. And I hope you're being able to do that. I think we hit most of these questions. Of any of the qualifications it asks, the number three, which are often overlooked or minimized? What would be your opinion there? Okay. A good testimony from those without sometimes is not checked out as well as it should. I put able to teach and hospitable, but again, this is an opinion type of question. And one thing it says, how are elders and deacons to first be tested? The thing I thought about was that their names are placed before the congregation for consideration. And people look at that and they look at the qualifications and they examine this person in light of those qualifications. I think that's one way to do it. Anyway, our time's up, and I believe we're ready for others to come in. So thank you for your comments.